Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. In celebration of the 100th birthday of architect I.M. Pei on April 26, 2017, Susan Wertheim honors Pei's gift to the nation, his design of the National Gallery of Art East Building. Harmonizing with architect John Russell Pope's neoclassical West Building, the award-winning East Building, which opened in 1978, was designed by Pei in the modern idiom of its time. Magnificently realizing the long-term vision of gallery founder Andrew W. Mellon and his children, Paul Mellon and Ailsa Mellon Bruce, the East Building has taken its place as one of the great public structures in the nation's capital. Designed at a crucial point in Pei's long and productive career, the East Building won the American Institute of Architects 25-year award in 2004, and Pei, considered a living legend, was awarded the Pritzker Architecture Prize in 1983. Wertheim first discusses Pei's architectural legacy at the gallery, and then joins with his longtime associate, Perry Y. Chin, to share experiences working on the recently completed East Building renovation.
I'm honored to commemorate this auspicious day with all of you. It's all of you, after all, our visitors and our staff, that were foremost in the mind of I.M. Pei, and your presence here today is a tribute to this important man. Mr. Pei knows that people will continue to invigorate the spaces here in this building. And like our architect, our building is warm and welcoming. It is open and democratic. Today belongs to Mr. Pei. We want to celebrate his 100th birthday, exactly today, and thank him for the design of this East Building of the gallery. This was his gift to the National Gallery of Art. So today's talk will be twofold. I will start with an understanding of I.M. Pei, the person, this amazing architect, and then we will look at him through the lens of understanding his architecture, the East Building. And then we'll do a little visual journey. I'll be the interpreter. And then when I'm finished, I'll turn the podium over to Perry Chin, and Perry is going to bring you to what's most recently happening architecturally at the East Building. So we're taking a snapshot in time, and we're going to be looking at the decade from 1968 to 1978. And what I want to show you is here is I.M. Pei right at the intersection of the, it's the midpoint of his career, so to speak. And he had a very long and productive architectural career. So he's in his early 50s in 1968. And that decade represents, in terms of the gallery's history, it's the initial design of the building, and then the building is built from 71 to 78, and then the opening ceremony to dedicate the building. So really, the personality traits of I.M. Pei are very evident in the building. And I want to take a minute to review what those are. So in terms of him as a person, he is a practical perfectionist. He is a purist. He is charismatic, and he is incredibly persuasive. I have heard him say no without ever using the word N-O. He is nothing if not humble, and he understands well the importance of people. So April 26th, 1917, exactly 100 years ago, Yeoming Pei is born in Canton, China. He comes to the United States at age 17 with an open and curious mind to study building engineering and architecture. He earns his bachelor's degree in architecture at MIT in 1940 and goes on to the Harvard Graduate School of Design and gets a master's there in 1946. He also meets his wife Eileen there. At Harvard, he studies with Walter Gropius, and his thesis project at Harvard, for the architects here is a museum. And everyone who has done something like this, the architects, you all know that whatever you selected for your thesis, you will remember for the rest of your life. So after the education, his professional career gets started quick and speedy, working for William Zeckendorf in New York City. And Zeckendorf has an in-house design firm called Webb and Knapp, and IMPAY is selected to head up that firm. So it's there in that office that I believe he really developed and solidified his sense of pragmatism. And he perfected working in architectural concrete, and that perfection of that material is evident in the East Building and in almost every other important building he's done. So I'm going to bring you quickly to the other end of the decade, and here on June 1st, 1978, at the dedication of the building, Paul Mellon comes to the podium and says this: "This building is the product of many minds intent on giving America their best, and we are happy to turn it over to you, Mr. President, to be dedicated forever to the use and enjoyment of the people of the United States." So just a thought, this building is the product of many minds. And we are very fortunate to have teams of people, a lot of teams of people here today, to really bring their best and to uphold the standards of excellence that the gallery believes in. But for today, we are going to focus on one very creative and very active mind. And what was challenging that mind and what was on his mind, as you saw in the introductory film from, that was a snip from the film A Place to Be, was the place, it was the site, that was what really was the challenge. And in the 60s, in the nation's capital, we have the National Mall. It's the scene of great change and upheaval in the country. There are many marches and many changes to the urban fabric of the district. And one most notable is this avenue, Pennsylvania Avenue, running from the Capitol, that's the shadow of the dome, to the White House. And the avenue is purposely, according to the L'Enfant plan, interrupting the rectilinear grid of Washington, D.C. And what happens is that's what creates the trapezoid. So the angle lobs off the rectangle here, where the future East Building will be, this vacant piece of land. Pennsylvania Avenue has also a group, a commission formed, the Pennsylvania Avenue Development Corporation, to see to the fact that it should become much more important and strengthened in terms of its urban design and streetscape. And then on the mall, this beautiful classical space, that axial space. So the mall has its roots in the Macmillan Plan, and the Macmillan Plan really sets up the classicism, and then in turn, it's IMPAY has a chance to respond to that. So the avenue, Pennsylvania Avenue, permeates everything about the building, and geometrically, it is in and of the building. So zooming in onto the mall and moving to what's going on the mall, architecturally, the National Air and Space Museum here has opened in 1976 for the bicentennial. And that is designed by HOK Gio Obata. And then next to it, the Hirshhorn also opens the same year. This is Gordon Bunshaft from Skidmore, Owings & Merrill. And directly across, we have the gallery's West Building and the future site of the gallery's sculpture garden. And then what's going on in the architectural world? The Whitney opened in 1966, the Guggenheim in the late 50s, and a contemporary of the East Building, the Pompidou Center in Paris by Piano and Rogers. It's basically, you know, it's a pier, but its response and its architectural design is quite different. So looking back a little deeper, this is John Russell Pope, and this is Pope's proposal for how to treat the parcels of land that are reserved for the National Gallery. So this drawing dates to about 1936 or 37. And here is 6th Street Northwest. This is Madison Drive. And this is showing you what would have happened if 6th Street hadn't been closed. It basically, this would be where the rotunda for the West Building stands today. So the street here is closed. And then this is the parcel, the trapezoid again, and Pope's more classical proposal for it. So it's interesting to see what might have happened if the buildings had all been designed at once. And I think we're lucky they weren't. We're the richer for having both. And this scheme down here, a variation on that theme with three buildings and straddling those two cross streets. So here we are, 1967, and what's going on at the National Gallery? John Walker is the director. J. Carter Brown is his assistant. Carter Brown becomes director of the gallery in 1969. And the gallery is thinking about expanding. And what they're thinking about, intuitively, you would assume it's because the modern art collection is growing by leaps and bounds and they need a new building to house it. But that's not the case. And what's actually the case is that they are driven by the need for a research building. And the interesting thing that I have found about the gallery is both of our buildings, which were both built with private funds, they were built by Andrew Mellon first, and then Paul and Ailsa Mellon Bruce, the donors. And they had the foresight and the wisdom to know that if they oversized the buildings and made them too big for the collection, they would inspire other collectors. And I think that's quite brilliant. So research is on the mind, though, and the library's running out of space, and they have this idea, and this is really reinforced by Paul Mellon, the patron. They have this idea that they need to develop what eventually becomes the Center for Advanced Study in the Visual Arts. So research and a study center are programmatically, that's really the driver. And then the next big thing are special exhibitions, because the gallery has started to come onto this, to the national stage for these big blockbuster shows. The other thing I want to point out before we move on is that this is the last time you will see a building entrance for this parcel on the Mall and on Pennsylvania Avenue. So the reviewing commissions later, by the time the assignment moves on, they restrict the entrance to 4th Street only. And this is the precursor to our underground connecting links. So these studies by Pietro Belluschi, who's engaged by the gallery to advise them and study how the program will fit the site. He looks into this idea of tunneling, and he tunnels under 4th Street, and here he actually straddles 4th Street, and here he does an independent building. But this whole study of siting and the gallery is really important, and it sets the stage, as well as Belluschi advises on how to select an architect. So why I.M. Pei? Who else was considered? Marcel Breuer, Louis Kahn was working on the Yale Center for British Art with Paul Mellon, Philip Johnson. The short list was about 10 or 12, but those are the most notable. And what really pushed Pei to the forefront, I think, in the minds of who was making the choice was this building. This is the Everson Museum in Syracuse, New York. And this is another architectural concrete masterpiece, and it's very well received, particularly by the architecture critic Ada Louise Huxtable. And she becomes a big proponent of I.M. Pei, and she's also very much in favor of the East Building design. He's also just completed the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, and Paul Mellon and Carter Brown visit that building, and they're very impressed by the way the researchers respond to that. So good reception by the staff can help you when you're an architect. So this is 1968, I.M. Pei in his New York office, and he says this about being awarded the commission. The project of the East Building of the National Gallery presented a singular challenge, as its location on the Great Mall possesses a special significance to me. I was 17 when I first came to America, so I felt most seriously the national and symbolic character of my task, which I faced, therefore, with both anxiety and exhilaration. For someone like me, and also for my staff, to hear a sense of trepidation when you're taking on a major undertaking, it really resonates, because every time we touch this building, it's with a great deal of respect and also a great deal of restraint. And then I'm introducing you here to the players. So who was in charge? Who was leading this bold and dramatic plan? Well, we have three. And at the East Building, a lot of things come in threes. We have three towers. Here we have three people. And these three, this is J. Carter Brown, then director. In the center, Paul Mellon, and I am Pei, the architect. So we have the director, the patron, the architect. But these three men, it makes a beautiful and very simple story, but they really truly did have this dynamic collaboration. And what they actually also did, which is even more important, is their boldness, they inspired, they brought others to bring out their best. And that's really what strong leadership is about. So Brown, Carter Brown and I am Pei quickly, after the commission's awarded, do the grand tour of European museums, and they visit the Pol di Pozzuoli in Milan. And it's there that the origins of the house museum that you saw in the film clip, that it's there that that idea gets cemented, that we want a more residential scale for the galleries. We want them to be more intimate than the future atrium, which is more of an open plaza space. So here's the site, and this is the vacant trapezoid highlighted in gold here with the plaza between. And this contemplation of expanding eastward and how to add to that beautiful neoclassical building is the challenge. And this drawing is one of my favorites, and what I love about it is here is this big circular fountain right in the middle of 4th Street, which basically the proposal was to just block 4th Street. So you all know that didn't happen, and it's definitely open to traffic. So to let the traffic through, the fountain moves to the west. But in this cross section through the same sketch, and I don't know the date of this sketch, but it's around 68. It's definitely early. This fountain is a waterfall. And that waterfall transforms into the veil of water on the tilted triangular plane that we call the Chidar Fountain that's on the plaza today. And the circle becomes a circle of bollards, and you'll see more later. So here is actually a great place. This is a carpet of stone cobbles connecting the two buildings, and this fountain, this circle, is here. But this slide I would call East meets West, okay? This is the dialogue. This is the rapport between what we have, a modern classical building and a classic modern building. And the East Building really is a classic modern building. It's timeless and it's fresh. And what ties the two together, what makes them sister structures, and what really gives them this rapport or dialogue is the stone, the Tennessee pink marble. And the idea to keep stone for both buildings was Paul Mellon's. In this drawing, a little more exploration, again, about that east-west axis and the triangle, and here, the plaza. And I want to point out that you can see these really young magnolia trees. So the architect, the landscape architect, Dan Kiley, who's part of the design team, flanks the plaza and reinforces the space with these tree groves. And we're probably one of the first green roof buildings on the mall for this. And then the grid of trees continues on the south lawn. Here it's not done, and we recently have replanted all those trees. And here, a site profile. This is the Capitol coming down. The towers are emerging, the bridges that connect them, and the height of the towers relates to the Pennsylvania Avenue height limit. And here's the West Building Dome, fall 1968. And this is in Ian Pei's hand. And this too, this is the party for the architects here. This is the organizing concept. And for everybody else, because it's such a pure and understandable form, especially in terms of a floor plan, it's easy to get it. This triangle, this isosceles triangle centered on the east-west axis, and then the research part, the study center, with the more acute 19 and a half degree angle. More studies. So the gallery archives here received from Ian Pei, from Pei Cobb Fried. At that point, the firm had become Pei Cobb Fried. It started as Ian Pei and Partners. In the mid-1980s, the gallery archives receives a treasure trove of all of the design sketches and the drawings for the building. And all of these studies show that although the idea came fairly early, the struggles with the geometry and how to treat the house, museums, and vestibules, these all evolve. And these are from the hand of Jan Weymouth, who was in the intro film and one of the leading members of the design team. And I'm just going to focus on this a little closer. Again, the three house museums, the atrium, and that what he calls the long bar, that wall of the study center. And this, the blue, is the atrium, and that's the fabric that connects the two structures together, the towers, the wrapper of galleries with the study center. And this just shows you that things don't always turn out the way they initially are planned. So this was one of the early presentation models to the commission for how the study center would look. And then it was refined on feedback from that public design review. So this is Commission of Fine Arts, National Capital Planning Commission. And then this is it today, and it looks much more like this second attempt. And then renderings are also used, and they study light and how to let light come into the atrium. And this is rendering versus reality. And this also, so the renderings, this is Paul Stevenson Olds, and he's a quite talented renderer. And he gives the client an idea of what the building will look like. So now we're going to quickly go into what I would call the Architecture 101, or Understanding Architecture. What are the essential elements and principles of Pei's design, and how does that help us understand him and his building? So really, the basic elements are space, light, geometry, scale and proportion, dynamic space, movement through space, and for modernism, I would add abstraction, and as Rusty said earlier, attention to detail. So if architecture is art, then I would say space is the medium, and light is how the space is manipulated, and I think the atrium is a great container that captures that. And this idea of light and the two, this study has two different treatments for the roof of the atrium. The coffered ceiling, like we have here in the auditorium, the concrete coffers, dark ceiling, and this where light starts to transmit through. And I think they realized that they needed the daylight to activate the space, but I think they kind of liked both. So they went on and we got the study center atrium. So we have two atrium spaces, one public and one less public. And the study center really is a more sacred, quieter, more reserved space. And it's quite beautiful for the researchers and staff. Geometry, you could teach a class in geometry, and I think we do have a module for teachers on our website that our education department puts forward. But if anyone ever asks you, so this module is actually printed on the title block of the drafting of the drawing sheets that were also in the archives for the study center development set. And the exact angle of our knife edge, our acute angle, which bisects the isosceles triangle here, is 19 degrees, 28 minutes, 16 seconds. And the geometry, these triangles continue. They're basically what Carter Brown called the leitmotif of the building. and more. So here, the triangular space frame, this is a three-dimensional structure of steel spanning a 16,000 square foot, spanning the 16,000 square foot atrium. And here, the building has this incredible ability to transform from what looks like a two-dimensional paper-thin billboard of a space to something that occasionally becomes more like six-dimensional. But this is a preview of coming attractions, because this is the found space that Perry came up with the roof terrace for. So later you're going to see how much that changes. But the building has this ability to change, and it does, depending on your point of view. And this one really reminds me of The Snake Is Out, which just recently got reinstalled, but it's that sense of abstraction and light in these beautiful pictures. And this with the outside coming in and the inside coming out, so trees in the atrium, and this flow from inside to out, and that uninterrupted plane, which was something I noticed the first time I visited. And it's a trait of modern buildings. Here, the introduction of human scale. So people are populating this study model of the atrium, and so are the works of art, and so are the trees. So it's the trees and the art, and Pei's concerned with not making the space overly monumental, and he's quite successful, as you can see, with people sitting at the ficus trees in the atrium. And the sculptural quality of the coffers and the sense of compression that some of the darker spaces opening up into daylight. And here, this is the Romeo and Juliet balcony, and you get this great view of the atrium. Here, we're coming through the moving walkway under 4th Street. So you saw those in the Belusky plans, saw that study. So this is our tunnel, and the moving walkway was very modern, and really it's become even more timeless with the addition of the Villa Real. And then the trays, the bridges and the mezzanines and the modulation of space and the gradual opening up into daylight. And the daylight is what draws you up those monumental stairs. And here we have probably my favorite sequence. It's coming out of the upper level of the Tower One gallery and into the atrium, and this is where the picture from the centennial celebration was taken, and it's probably one of the best vantage points in the building. But the atrium with the Calder it's meant to orient you. But the other interesting thing about the atrium is that no matter where you stand in it, it looks slightly different. This is a new photo, and I would call this one Celtic Knot. So this is really, I think, a great illustration of what happens when you set up symmetry and then you go about destroying it, or basically disintegrating it. And you use that Ian Pei uses that to great advantage, that play on symmetry and then none. And here, you're always reminded back to these triangles, right? But here, you have no sense of it. So basically, in terms of space, the building, it's not staid, it's very dynamic. Movement through space, we talked about that with the atrium, with those pictures, those sequences. But this also, people have asked me, what's with this carving in on the wall of the study center? Is that a mistake? No. This was here from the beginning, this deep shadow, and that idea, to me, it looks like a big super graphic saying up. So he wants you to climb the building. And I think now we've given people more reasons to do that. So the attention to detail is phenomenal, and it's a great reflection on the precision and rigor of the craftspeople that build the buildings. And when it comes to working with artists and commissioning works of art for the building, a place to be is the definitive source. So I'm going to shortchange this piece a little bit, but here's one illustration, and this is Alexander Calder in the middle working with Carter Brown and Pei on the Calder Mobile for the atrium. And it was commissioned for the space, as were most of the major works of art in the atrium and at the front entrance. Henry Moore is here installing knife edge two pieces. This is Moore. I believe this is his daughter who came to help. And in addition, Pei had his own relationships with artists, and that served him well for the building. And just a little side fact is that Sol LeWitt, who does those the great wall drawings, Sol LeWitt was actually a draftsperson in IMPE's office. Okay, back to June 1st, 1978. So this is President Carter at the podium, and he is receiving the gift to the nation from Paul Mellon. And he says this, this building too is the product of many minds, of many hands, all intent on giving America their best. All have done so. IMPE and his associates have given us an architectural masterpiece. This great architect saw the unusual shape of the site, not as an obstacle, but as an opportunity. He goes on to call the building dignified and daring, monumental, yet without pomposity. And he talks about how the building pays reverence to the past, but also displays an eagerness for the future. So President Carter's remarks echo Paul Mellon's, but he adds, and many hands. And where are the hands? So you can't forget what it takes, who builds your architecture, what it takes to build great architecture. And it's a lot of hands on the building. And IMPE opening day, this made it to the cover of Esquire magazine. And opening night, I have a quick story. So there is a party, I think it's May 30th. It's on the mezzanine of the East Building. And in the middle of this photo, this is Mr. and Mrs. Mellon. So Mrs. Mellon is talking to IMPE about how can she surprise her husband for this opening event. And they start talking about what would Paul Mellon like, and the topic of music and jazz, and specifically Benny Goodman, all come up. So IMPE, the light bulb goes off, and he's a friend of Benny Goodman's. So he offers to go with his wife to Benny Goodman's house nearby, his, and to convince him to come. So not only does he convince Benny Goodman to show up for this event, but Benny Goodman comes incognito, sits at the back of the room, and only comes to the stage when the band starts playing. And this is all for the surprise and delight of Paul Mellon. So the building opens, and there are a lot of critical acclaim, a lot of awards, and a lot of accolades. And there are a few criticisms, and they mostly have to do with, do the galleries really work for the display of art? So to answer that question, I would invite you all to go upstairs and see the new installation with our permanent collection and judge for yourself. IMPE immediately wins the AIA gold medal in 1979. Then, 1983, he wins the Pritzker Prize. This is like the Nobel Prize for architects. In 2004, the building wins the AIA 25-year award. And this year, 2017, the Grand Louvre, Pei's other masterpiece, is joined for that award. And it's for a building that stands the test of time. In 1998, IMPE returns. He has been coming back many times, but most significant, he comes in 1998 for what's called our Elson Lecture, and that's an interview with a living artist. So our director, Rusty Powell, invites Pei to the Elson Lecture on the 20th anniversary of the building, and here's what happens.
I'm going to quote you here, which is probably not... it's not ungracious, really, but when you accepted the Pritzker Architecture Prize in 1983, you said in your acceptance remarks that you believe that architecture is a pragmatic art, and that to become art, it must be built on a foundation of necessity. That comment, to me, seems perfectly to describe the success of the East Building. One of the things I and others have found is that the building is... classic in the sense that the spaces, the aesthetics of the building, one never tires of. Do you still believe that the best architecture is fundamentally pragmatic, a response to a specific site and circumstance?
I no longer do.
When did that?
I think as one gets older, one learns that the art of architecture should not be shortchanged. It is an art. it's an art form. But at that time, Pritzker's 1983, it's about 15 years ago, I felt that that was important for me to say, because at that time there was, among architects, now some of you are here architects, there was a lot of disagreement among architects. It's what architecture really is. Is it a social art, or is this pure art? I mean, there was a constant argument back and forth. I felt there was just too much of the other talk to say architecture is pure art. You can ignore all the necessities of that, what a building is designed for and all that, and as long as it's a beautiful building, you can justify it all. I felt that was a challenging kind of a situation that I don't entirely agree with. But when I said it at that time, you have to see it, understand it in the context of that time. Today, obviously, I would like to put more emphasis on architecture as an art form. And I can do so now, but I couldn't 20 years ago.
Very interesting.
So, in the ensuing years, I.M. Pei continues to visit, and his relationship with our building and with the people at the gallery, really with the building, it's like a favorite child to him, I feel. He wants to check up, he wants to make sure we're taking good care of it, and he also wants to offer advice. And that ability to consult the living architect, the person who designed the building, when we take on projects, that's really, it's just a great gift. And we're really grateful for his willingness to give of his mind. So he visits, parties and events, and more parties and events, and enjoys it. And so do the visitors. And the visitors here are leaving their mark on the building. And they're doing what one of the architects here in the room on my staff calls knife edge worship. So this touching of the building and leaving that mark on that very acute angle is something, it's just a natural thing. People can't believe that it's so thin and so fine, and yet it's so massive, it's so heavy, it weighs a lot. But it's great, we think it's great that people do this, and we're never going to overclean it. And then another example. And really, of all the names on this inscription about the builders of the building, it's I.M. Pei's name that people want to rub. And I think this is a sign of deep respect in many cultures. So it's this caring and this sense of stewardship that are so important here at the gallery. And to me, Paul Mellon really summed up what all the things we've been talking about today, about whether architecture is art, or that relationship and what it means, what it takes to make a great building, and a strong connection between an architect and his work. And Mellon said this, "I have commissioned a variety of works of art during my lifetime, but only one great work of art. This was the East Building. The choice of I.M. Pei as architect was ultimately mine, and I shall always be proud that I made that choice." So now we have a speedier time lap, and we're going to do the handoff to Perry, who's coming soon, and he will conclude today's program with the current project. But just following on what Rusty talked about to set the stage, in 2008, Daryl Wilson and I made a call to I.M. Pei, and again, we were contemplating a fairly major set of renovations through our master facilities plan. And we needed to make a lot of improvements, including a very practical and fairly basic fire and life safety improvements. But they were challenging, and we had these empty shafts. We had these stair shafts in the towers along Pennsylvania Avenue. So When we placed the call, IMP was 91 at the time, and wisely, I think he realized his travel was going to need to be curtailed, and he wanted to hand it off to the next generation. So Perry, his most trusted and longtime associate, steps onto the stage, so to speak. And Perry really did what IMP did so well. He converted an obstacle into an opportunity. And his brilliant concept for the construction of these tower galleries, which you're all enjoying here, so this is inserting a structure into those big towers on Pennsylvania Avenue. And like I said, simplicity is complex, or this makes everything look so easy, but hey, it really wasn't. But Perry has this great idea, and he really does basically unlock the potential in the building, and he combines the public stewardship with the private the private donations, because when we expand the galleries, that was done with private funds, and he basically takes on the challenge of a public-private partnership of a project. So with that, I'm turning it over to Perry.
Susan, that was great. Mr. Perry would have been proud to have listened to this, and he will after this podcast, right? Well, that time-lapse photography represented 2.5 years of dedication. Dedication by Whiting and Turner Contracting Company, Hartman and Cox Architects, and their associates and consultants, National Gallery's architect and engineering staff, and significant input from all the departments within the National Gallery. Leadership from the director, executive officers, design and installation, architecture, engineering, and curatorial departments. Please accept my sincere thank you for all the hard work you put together on behalf of Mr. Pei. We are indebted also to Victor and Roger Sant, Mitchell and Emily Rawls, and David M. Rubenstein, corporations, individuals, for their generous donations. And combined with the public funds, we are able to get this project off the drawing board. Here you can see Nick Benson's artistic carving on your way out near the entrance of the building. Mr. Pei has just gotten off the phone with Daryl and Susan. He turns to me, Perry, I need you to go to Washington. Okay. He says, he says, to help the gallery with finding a solution to improving the exiting in the East Building. Okay. A month into the project, I have been reviewing drawings and crawling around the East Building with the architects and engineer of the gallery, and I could not find a solution. Lots of pressure. So in the feel of the East Building, I had come across a sun-filled room. The sun-filled room was just beautiful. And then I have also seen a shaft, a new shaft. However, we can put the stair in there, but there looks to be something in the way. I've also heard and learned from the Washingtonian magazine that the director, Rusty Powell III, needs more exhibition space. Now with that, I thank you, Rusty, for that note. And now I have the audacity to make that proposal to you. I want to thank the generosity of the time, information, and spirits of the National Gallery staff. And from this information, I came up with a concept, creating more exhibition space by inserting a floor over an existing gallery and installing stairs on either side that would go up and down and connect all the floor levels. However, Mr. Pei's original stair is still there. What to do? So the next day I met with him, and working with Mr. Pei, I understood one of his philosophy was that throughout the life of a building, it will change. It will change to accommodate the time and the need of the occupants. After meeting with him, he liked the concept and understood the benefits to making these changes. He didn't smile that much like that. But he did nod. He says, Perry, the gallery would have more exhibition space. And that's just wonderful. The architecture and engineering team was receptive to the proposal. Darrell Wilson brought this to Rusty Powell and Frank Kelly's attention and was presented to the Board of Trustees. And from the looks of this photograph, they approved it, right? Still in the early stages, there was a lot of work, 7.5 years between the presentation to the trustees and the completion of the building. One of our goals with the gallery and the architects of Hartman Cox was to make this expansion appear seamless, elegant in design, minimal in detail. And when all said and done, it should feel like it was knit from the same cloth of the original building. I was also mindful of Mr. Pei's overall design philosophy, architecture to serve a purpose for people relates to that particular time and place. Mr. Pei had asked that these new stairs should appear light and elegant. And as you can see, it is. I hope you would agree. For me, the heart of the problem in the expansion was these public stairs. It's like adding a new blood vessels in the human body. These stairs, with the addition of a large elevator in Tower 2, increase the flexibility in planning for curators, design installation, improve access for visitors, circulation, and egress. I was delighted to learn at the opening that Harry Cooper, head of modern art and contemporary art, has calculated 479 million routes to see his art. Now, we have two new tower galleries on the highest level of the building. To get there, one would either take the stairs, this is Tower 1, or you could take the elevator from below and you enter into a nice private lobby. Or you could turn around behind you and go to the terrace. So with this lobby, this vestibule, it's a very private space, semi-private, and you enter into this gallery and you feel like it's someplace special. It's quiet. There's not much cross traffic as you would have on the lower floors when it's contiguous. The light is magnificent. It's terribly important because when the sunlight changes, we feel alive. It changes the mood. It invites contemplation. And then on Tower 2, the quality and the scale of these galleries was modeled after the House Museum, as Susan has mentioned earlier. Now we have three House Museums on the top of the building in their rightful place. Imagine a place where people would like to come to enjoy art together with relaxing and look out over the cityscape and see the architecture of the East Building from an entirely new perspective. It's wonderful to see those sculpture of the steel trusses that hold up the skylight. Or to look across adjacent buildings. A place to view art in the open air, especially a wonderful place for conversations. Or just post a photo on Instagram now. simply to recharge for all ages, for families, so forth. I see this roof terrace as a destination now, especially with such a magnetic work by Katharina Fritz, named Han Kap in place. It's dramatic and grand up here. We included landscaping of Chinese fringes to subdivide this otherwise large roof into a human scale area with seating in the round, which will provide much needed shade in the summer. These planters grouping mimic the planters on the ground level. The continuous planters on the south wall begins to enclose this vast roof, provide shade as well. A stair was necessary to egress this roof. And I'm glad we did that because it has improved circulation and it provides a direct access from the level below. So now you know the secret. Mr. Pei is delighted with how well maintained the gallery is when he visits the gallery. He often has visitors that come up and thank him for building such a marvelous building. In the gallery, there's a sense of delight in the faces of visitors and employees alike. Coming from New York, it took a little time to get comfortable with that. In this blissful environment, I thought there was something in the drinking water. But I soon realized it must come from the top, starting with Paul Mellon, J. Carter Brown, and now Rusty Powell. After Mr. Pei's retirement, on my visits with him, we would talk about past projects, clients, and our families, and food, too. In almost each meeting, he would remember fondly that Paul Mellon was one of his best clients. He was a gentleman, he says. He speaks of Paul Mellon sending Carter Brown and Pei to investigate the finest museum as research for the East Building at that time. It was obvious to me that they both had a great deal of mutual respect for each other. In a passage from the book, Conversations with I.M. Pei, I have found, I quote, "You've always need a person with a vision to pull you upward. And I have been fortunate to know a number of such exceptional individuals. And Mr. Mellon is definitely one of them." From Mr. Mellon's semi-autobiography, Reflections in a Silver Spoon, "I have come to know I.M. Pei well over the years. My respect for him as a man, my admiration for his professional and creative abilities have grown steadily. I.M. realizes that a building in the modern idiom was indicated, but that it should harmonize with its neighboring buildings. To the east, the Capitol, and to the west, Pope's original gallery, both designed in the neoclassic style. This effect was partially achieved by my facing the new building with marble from the Tennessee quarry that was used for the original gallery." End of quote. Rusty, I want to thank you for trusting me with this commission and the opportunity to celebrate I.M. Pei's centennial here with this audience. What better way to give thanks and honor to a teacher than to show him that I have learned and practiced the art of his craft? Here at the National Gallery, a place, a design to serve people, maximize the potential of the East Building for now and for the immediate future. And thank you all for coming today. Thank you.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.